Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News, and now 2 weeks and a day from Election Day, it's time for the Political Junkie. Welcome back, Ken. How are you?
Well, 2 weeks ago, you probably answered your own question.
And today, are you feeling, where do you live? Do you live in Maryland? Are you feeling inundated with political ads?
No, because I live in Maryland. That's the thing. If you live in a non-swing state, if you live in a state that is reliably Democratic, and Maryland is certainly reliably Democratic, of course, we do see a lot of Virginia campaign commercials on the airwaves here. And, of course, Virginia is much closer, although Hillary Clinton seems to have a big lead thanks to Tim Kaine being on the ballot.
Yeah.
But, again, you don't see the kind of commercials you would see in, like, Ohio, North Carolina, or states like that,
of course. Yeah, we're not seeing that many in Minnesota either, and I think for the same reason.
I think Minnesota last went for a Republican, I think it was Lincoln in 1864, the last time I voted Republican.
Exactly. If you have questions about the campaign or individual candidates for Ken, give us a call or tweet in 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and I'm on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Ken, this is what I want to ask you. Last Monday when we talked, we were on the eve of that last presidential debate. I'd like you to take a look at the three debates as a whole and give me a sense of whether you think they shifted voter perceptions, whether they really changed the race. What's your big picture on that?
Well, I think this is not the question you're asking, but historically, debates don't usually change the dynamic of a race. But this one seems to. I mean, I don't think minds were changed after the first one or the second one, but there seemed to be a snowballing event going on from the second to the third to where we are now. And that is with the release of that 11-year-old tape of Donald Trump and Billy Bush, him talking about his sexual exploits and what he can do to women, to the last debate where he said, well, all these women are liars, and then I've never done this, to women coming forward after the last debate saying, no, you actually have done this, to him saying, well, I'm not going to sue all these women. It seems like the Trump campaign has just sunk into a morass of he said, she said, and mostly she said, she said, that I think voters are finally listening to, although it's remarkable to me that they haven't been listening to these kind of complaints about Donald Trump all along. Like so many of these Republican candidates down the ticket, down the ballot, are saying, well, now because of this tape, I am no longer going to support Donald Trump, when he's been saying incendiary things all along. But I think only in the last couple of days, maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks, has the Donald Trump, any chances he has for winning the president seems to have fallen by the wayside because of what we heard in the debate and on these tapes.
Yeah, I want to mention the so-called Gettysburg address that he did over the weekend, where you mentioned that Donald Trump says he's going to sue these women. That's what he opened with. Unbelievable at this speech.
This was supposed to be his closing argument. Here he is in Gettysburg trying to make the case. Here's why I should be elected after 8 years of Barack Obama. Here's the kind of change I would bring. And basically it's about how dare these things happen to me. It's like, you know, that famous opera singer who led every speech with me, 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 me. I mean, this is exactly what Donald Trump is doing. And that's not what you expected to hear in a closing argument in Gettysburg.
Ken, I saw an interesting exchange yesterday between Jake Tapper on CNN and Kellyanne Conway, one of his chief campaign people. And Tapper was really trying to get at what the campaign thought when it's obvious that they crafted this speech with a lot of, you know, ideas and policy suggestions. And then he opens with that. Tapper was asking Kellyanne Conway whether they, you know, whether they were aghast, whether that was even in the speech. Of course it wasn't that they wrote. And then what they thought as he gave it. And you just mentioned what's happening inside the campaign as far as giving up on whether they think he's going to win. What's your sense of what's going on behind the scenes?
I think you're absolutely right. I think they're aghast at things like that. The fact that he will spend the time in Gettysburg talking about suing women. The fact that he'll go to the Al Smith charity dinner in New York City, which has always been, historically been, where the two candidates get away from the nastiness and do self-deprecating humor and things like that. And Donald Trump goes to this Catholic charity's dinner and says Hillary Clinton is a liar and she pretends...
I know.
And she doesn't hate Catholics. And people sitting there saying, oh, my goodness, he really said this. And so, you know, I mean, we always talked about, for years, remember the new Nixon? We were going to see a new Nixon.
I don't remember that. No, Ken.
Well, I mean, Richard Nixon after the slashing, burning stuff of the 50s, and you're not going to have Nixon to kick around anymore. He came back in 68 with this new persona that he was just more smiling, and he would say, sock it to me on laughing, and everybody liked him and things like that. But Donald Trump, not to say that you can't change your stripes at the age of 70, but Donald Trump has always been Donald Trump. And for people to say, I can't believe he hasn't changed now that we're getting closer to the election, just belies everything we've seen of Donald Trump for all these years.
We talked about battleground states last week. Ken, I want you to zero in on states like Georgia and Utah. And here's my question. You know, Hillary Clinton obviously wants a mandate. Every presidential candidate does. Is this the year where even if she wins a red state, and no saying she's going to, but if she would win Arizona, Georgia, Utah, traditionally Republican, she can claim some kind of mandate that will make any kind of a difference in Congress and beyond?
No, I well, see, the thing is, she does have avenues to, like North Carolina, which went for Romney in 2012. I think she's opened up a little lead in North Carolina, could even take down the Republican governor and maybe even the Republican senator. Arizona, as you mentioned, Arizona, Georgia. The last poll I saw, that was a CBS poll that had Hillary Clinton within 3 points in Texas. Now, I don't think it's that close, but if it is that close, then you know that, one, the demographic changes in Texas are happening faster than we thought, but more likely that the Republicans are just so, maybe they're Ted Cruz Republicans, but they're so angry and disillusioned with Donald Trump that they may stay home or just not vote for Hillary Clinton. But even if she wins by a landslide, and right now it seems like it's heading in her, I'm not saying landslide direction, but it's certainly heading in her direction. An ABC Washington Post poll over the weekend had it 50-38, which was the biggest lead I've seen so far in a national
poll. And you don't really think
poll.
It's going to come, I mean, you do think that those numbers will be closer, don't you?
No, I don't. I think it almost reminds me of 1980, where it was pretty much tied between Ronald Reagan and President Carter going into the one and only debate. Reagan won the debate, and his numbers kept increasing and increasing and increasing until through Election Day, and he won almost like a landslide. I do see her numbers increasing. I do see Trump's numbers decreasing. But any chance of any kind of like comity after the election, first of all, one, the classic line that he may not accept the legitimacy of the election, the results, he won't recognize it because it's rigged, in his words. Two, another poll showed that 45% of Republicans think it's going to be a rigged election. And three, if that's the case, then the Republicans who do survive November 8th, and they may not survive the Senate, I assume they will survive the House, but there's going to be, if we thought there's going to be battling between the Republicans and the Democratic White House under Obama, I think people are going to miss those days after in 2017, because I think there's going to be more resentment, more bitterness, more anger than ever, and we're back to where we started, as if nothing changes.
Okay, you kind of answered my question there then, that even if red states flip for her, she cannot assume that means any kind of lowering of barriers from Republican members of Congress. Although I will say this, I saw a report this morning on one of the cable news channels that she's quietly reaching out to some Republican leaders in Congress already.
Yes, she's doing that, but she's also going to Florida and saying Marco Rubio has got to go. She's going to Pennsylvania.
Well,
and says,
but yes.
So if these guys survive, these guys and gals, the Republicans survive, you know that they're not going to forgive Hillary Clinton, president-elect or President Hillary Clinton in 2017. Sure, I mean, look, she wants a sweeping victory.
Right.
And she, of course, she wants Democrats along with her.
Right.
But the, at the same time, the Republicans are also campaigning, saying, look, we've got to stop a blank check for Hillary Clinton. We've got to keep Republican controls on the House. Look, John McCain said the other day that he would never vote for Hillary Clinton Supreme Court justice. I mean, that's remarkable. I mean, it's one thing to say, well, you know, I'm not going to vote for Obama's choice of Merrick Garland because it's the year,
right.
It's the year of a presidential election. So I never heard of that argument before. But to say now that I would never vote for Hillary Clinton Supreme Court justice, I'm just thinking the obstructionism you saw in the Obama days, I don't think that disappears at all. And of course, we also want to know, and the Republican Party will probably be spending so much time fighting itself,
exactly.
Probably a mutiny against Paul Ryan. I mean, my goodness, this doesn't end on November 8th by any stretch of the imagination.
Call for you here, Ken, from Cheryl in Eden Prairie. Hi, Cheryl. Your question.
Hi. When I hear NPR reports on the Republicans just saying, I cannot vote for Hillary, they feel that she is just so dishonest. Is it not correct that the congresspeople at some point had really endorsed Hillary in her performance? And when did that change? Was it Benghazi? But how amazing to me that they just have a total blanket disgust and that they don't trust her at all.
Okay,
I know exactly what Cheryl is asking, and that's a great question. I mean, my theory has always been, look, we know that from her time as First Lady, there's always been a Republican, well, I'm not going to say the vast right-wing conspiracy, but the Republicans never liked Hillary Clinton or even Bill Clinton. When they did like her is when she was Secretary of State, and the reason I think they praised Hillary Clinton's foreign policy chops was to do it in contrast to the weakness, the so-called weakness of Barack Obama. So when they were saying all those good things about Hillary Clinton, and if only she were president, I think it was really to point out by omission what a failure they thought President Obama was. And now that Obama is fading into the background and Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nominee and perhaps likely president, they resumed their anger and disgust with her. But I don't think it really disappeared. I think it was only tactical when they were praising her as Secretary of State.
Okay, so Ken, time for your newsmaker sound. And this is not a big mystery, but I really want to talk about this race with you. So listen to this sound.
I was shocked to learn that Kelly Ayotte voted 6 times to defund Planned Parenthood.
It wasn't just once. She voted 6 times to defund Planned Parenthood. It seems like she's on some kind of crusade to get rid of it.
I can't imagine what the thousands of women in New Hampshire would do if Planned Parenthood was defunded.
Maggie Hassan's record? Hassan voted over 100 times for more taxes and fees. Just imagine what she'd do unchecked in Washington with a new president. Maggie Hassan, too risky for New Hampshire.
Talk about that race. Is that turning out to be like the most expensive Senate race in the country in New Hampshire?
Well, I don't know if it's the most expensive, but it's certainly almost dead even. The fact is that Kelly Ayotte had been a rising star in Republican circles, was elected 6 years ago, and we thought, a lot of people thought that she would be one of the new faces of the Republican Party. But Donald Trump's candidacy has really hurt her cause. And when she said in a debate with Maggie Hassan a few weeks ago that she can see Donald Trump as a role model, and then immediately had to backtrack on that, I mean, this is what he's done to Republicans around the country, that you're either defending Donald Trump, you're either defending his treatment of women, the groping of women, the alleged sexual assaults of women, or you're not. And it may be an easy, lazy tactic, but it's successful, and Democrats are doing it, utilizing it around the country. Almost word for word, I heard a commercial in Virginia, suburban Virginia, about Barbara Comstock, who's a Republican conservative who voted against Planned Parenthood, and the commercials are lambasting her for opposing women's rights. This issue is almost boilerplate around the country, that you're either for Donald Trump, and if you're for Donald Trump, where do you stand on his treatment of women, or you're an independent? And of course, if you break from Donald Trump, you risk the ire of all these Trump voters who said, well, if you're a Republican and you're not staying with Donald Trump, we're gonna abandon you as well. This is what put these Republican candidates in great disarray.
Two words for you, Ken Rudin: nasty women.
Well, they're not as bad as bad hombres, but I mean, my goodness. And by the way, I just want to say something.
You're the puppet. No, you're the puppet.
No, you are. I mean, I won't insult fifth graders, but my goodness, it was just one after another after another. A nasty woman. I mean, Donald Trump, I've never seen Donald Trump put back on his heels as he was in that third debate, because he's been dishing it out for a year and a half. The New York Times has a spectacular 2-page foldout today in today's paper about all the tweets, that poor person who had to put this all together.
I know.
But all the insults he's had about everybody, Marco Rubio and the New York Times and CNN and all those people, and just go through one after another, and it's hundreds, if not thousands of them. And now for him to say, to be resolved, you know, to wind up saying, what a nasty woman. I mean, he had nothing else to say.
No, you're the puppet.
No, okay. Yeah, you're right.
Ken, I'll talk to you next week. One week out from Election Day.
I want more.
I do too. Are we going to drive people insane if I say I'm loving this campaign because people are super engaged. There's so much to talk about. I know a lot of people are ready for it to be done. Are you?
Kerry, right before this episode, thing we just did, I heard your conversation saying that you're really a nice person. I don't think people will think of that after you want this campaign.
No, I said I gave up on the idea.
Oh, then it's okay. Yeah, I want this campaign to keep going. Right.
Ken, I'll talk to you soon. Thanks very much.